W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
Shoppers turned out for Black Friday. Abrielle Laurent went to the Lakeside Shopping Center in New Orleans, where she was handed a glass of champagne.
When I saw people walking around with it, I thought it was something they were buying. But so when the lady told us it was complimentary, that was even better.
Our Rita Foley has more.
Macy's Herald Square in Manhattan has been bustling with shoppers today. 60% off fashion jewelry, 50% off select shoes, says Macy's. CEO Jeff Gannett says there's significantly more traffic on this Black Friday compared to the previous 2 years because shoppers feel more comfortable in crowds. But how much money will they spend? Analysts say shoppers are buying cheaper items now as higher prices for food, rent, gas, and other necessities weigh on them. They're dipping more into savings and turning to buy now, pay later services. Some are running up their credit cards. I'm Rita Foley.
And I'm Ben Thomas, AP News.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. The federal infrastructure law has been in effect for a year now. Community leaders around Wisconsin are optimistic about badly needed repairs and improvements. Here's Mike Moen.
At the League of Wisconsin Municipalities, Zach Brewing says so far nearly $3 billion in projects have been announced with funding from the law. Most are transportation-related, and Brewing says it's badly needed, as many areas have backlogs for priorities like road and bridge repairs.
And so by having a real strong federal partnership in the area of infrastructure helps address some of the backlog.
The law will also provide states funding for clean water infrastructure and expansion of high-speed internet. The plan did have some Republican opposition, but has otherwise been hailed by political analysts as a bipartisan achievement. Despite the significance of the law, some of those analysts say it hasn't stayed on the public's radar, especially during the recent election. But supporters are still getting the word out. Megan Rowe is with Opportunity Wisconsin, which has spent the last year educating communities about the benefits of these projects.
Whether we're spending less on car repairs due to updated roads and bridges, having access to safe drinking water or improved mass transit opportunities, this law is a once-in-a-generation investment in our state's infrastructure and competitiveness.
And as more projects are announced, Rowe says it means additional well-paid union jobs for distressed areas. She says the long-term benefits from various improvements should particularly help rural areas and underserved communities. An interactive online map from the White House shows the projects so far are spread fairly evenly across Wisconsin. Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell.
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
I'm really trying hard not to go insane from the mind screw that is this situation. Yes. With the I was going to say the GAB, but now it's the WEC, which is audited by the LAB, and then it's now screwed up by the GOP. We're all SOL. Good for us. Congratulations.
Look at all those acronyms. Yeah.
We're the winners.
Tune in for Dueling Tangents every weekday at 2.
27% of the American workforce, and some even say 30%, were in unions who had representation and who clearly did not have to worry about whether or not they were going to get their fair share. But I'm definitely going to fight for people who get the short end of the stick in this society only because they don't have representation. That's who I am.
Check out the Earl Ingram Show every day from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. only on WAUK 540 a.m. 101 FM, The Shaw.
To protect his family from disaster, Steve used his camera phone.
Done.
By taking pictures of his important documents, Steve can always have them stored online. Learn more simple disaster prep tips at ready.gov. A message from FEMA and the Ad Council.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
I spend a lot of time in the garage, but even more time in the rain and mud.
In 95, I helped tow your moving trailer. And in 09, it was sparks from me, your chains, dragging behind your truck that accidentally started a wildfire.
Spark a change, not a wildfire. Visit SmokeyBear.com, brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
You know, I grew up hearing that women are bad with money. But like many of you, I spent years paying bills, managing checking accounts, and taking care of my family. So, turns out, women are pretty good with money after all. And now, I'm taking control of my financial future by saving for retirement. It's never too late to start, and there's a great website to help you. Check out WeSaySaveIt.org and jumpstart your retirement savings on your budget and your timeline. That's WeSaySaveIt.org, brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Morning Cannolis with James Centel is an independent product and has a joint sales agreement with Civic Media. Enjoy.
Welcome. Grab your favorite morning beverage and join us for Morning Cannolis with Jim Santel.
You don't know me, but I'm your brother.
Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
Good morning. This is Jim Santel. Thank you so much for joining me. This is our weekend review. Our analysis, our discussion of the most important stories in law, in government, and the aspiration of justice in America. I appreciate your spending some portion of your Saturday morning, this Saturday, November 26th, with me and with my ever-faithful, professional, engaged producer, Kelvin. We're in the studios here of WAUK Radio, The Shaw in Waukesha, 540 AM, 101 FM. Also taking your phone calls throughout this hour and the second hour this morning. That number is 844-967-2789. Once again, thank you for joining us this morning for our analysis, our review, our discussion of many important things going on in America and around our state of Wisconsin, too. We're to begin this morning, as we always do, with a bit of a description of our syllabus, always ambitious, but always achievable, as it is in previous Saturday mornings. We're going to begin with some 10 major events that happened on November 26th in the history of our nation and of our world. That'll be coming up in just a moment or so. And then we're going to spend the rest of this morning and the first hour and the second hour both talking about some major issues going on principally in the courts of America. Six courts in particular, three of them federal, three of them state, chatting about things, updates from this past week that have occurred that affect all of our lives indirectly and directly as a part of the jurisprudence in the United States of America. Second, we're also going to be spending some time talking about some related issues having to do with education this morning at the end of our second hour. Always, again, taking your phone calls at 844-967-2789. Thank you once again for joining me this morning on Morning Cannolis. Let's get right to this day in history. 10 different significant events happening in our world, in our nation. Today, in 1883, Sojourner Truth, the wonderful, great, inspiring African-American evangelist and social reformer of our nation's history, who applied her religious and her civil rights fervor to abolitionist causes and women's rights, died today on 1883. Sojourner Truth, a great monumental figure in American history, iconic in many ways, large and even greater than large. Second, today in 1917 was the day the National Hockey League was founded, first beginning in Canada, featuring four Canadian teams. It wasn't until 1924, about 7 years later, the Boston Bruins were added as the first American team. The National Hockey League founded today in 1917. 1922, exactly 100 years ago today, one of those issues, one of those events that we all do not recall, but nonetheless learned about when we were going to school, had to do with King Tut. It was today in 1922 that Lord Cameron and his archaeologist friend Howard Carter, you may remember that name as well, first entered King Tut's tomb. It was buried by sands of thousands of years in Egypt. Eventually discovered by Carter a couple of days before actually entering into the tomb, one of the great archaeological discoveries of our time. Interestingly, both British Lord Cameron and Howard Carter died within 7 months of entering that tomb, giving rise to the myths of the mummy's curse as a result of their historical entry into that tomb 100 years ago today. 1941, November 26, after Abraham Lincoln much earlier had announced this as a national holiday, Franklin Delano Roosevelt officially signed congressional action, officially signed a bill coming out of Congress making the fourth Thursday, November, a national day of remembrance, a national day of thanksgiving of all the things that we are thankful for, establishing formally through congressional action and legislative signature Thanksgiving Day as a national holiday in 1942, just 1 year later, also on November 26, Casablanca, the classic movie starring Humphrey Bogart and Ingrid Bergman, had its world premiere at the Hollywood Theater in New York City. Later would go on to earn 3 Oscars, including the Best Picture. 1942, Casablanca first makes its way onto the scene in America and, of course, around the world as well. 1977, an event that I recall, I suspect many of you also recall, an unidentified hacker named Vrillon, V-R-I-L-L-O-N, long before we knew about the word hacking and the notion of hacking into something technological. He claimed to be the representative of a thing called Astor Galactic Command. He took over Britain's Southern Television for about 6 minutes. It was the first time that there had been a hacking event involving technology. In this case, in Great Britain, the Southern Television broadcast company there, taking over it for 6 minutes and introducing us, perhaps not in the best way possible, nonetheless introducing us to the notion of intervention in our technology that way back in 1977. 1983, a few years later, in London, 6,800 gold bars worth about 26 million pounds were stolen from, again, a now notorious vault, Brinksmat Vault in Heathrow. That happening in 1983, a huge heist of gold bars at that time, 2003. It was on this day in 2003 that the Concorde, one of the supersonic passenger transport jets, made its last flight across Bristol, England, bringing to an end its 24 years of flight beginning way back in 1979. The Concorde made its final flight today in 2003. And more events. 2009, also another event that many of you, if not all of you, recall well. George W. Bush was certified the winner of Florida's electoral votes by a woman named Katherine Harris, Secretary of State at the time. You may recall that name from our nation's history. Of course, George Bush would go on to win the presidential election. Despite losing the popular vote, a Supreme Court case called Bush versus Gore in 2000 basically put an end to counting in the state of Florida, awarding George Bush just enough electoral votes to become the president in 2001, being sworn in January of that year. And a final event in 2008, a very sobering event. Once again, world history changed many things, not only in India, but around the world. This was the day of the Mumbai terrorist attacks. These 10 coordinated shooting and bombing attacks, principally in Mumbai and surrounding areas, identified as terrorists from Pakistan, identified as the perpetrators of those terrorist attacks between November 26th of 2008 and November 29th. Last about 3 days or so altogether, 173 people killed, 308 wounded in those horrific attacks in Mumbai 2008 on November 26. All those things happening this day day in our history. It is the 330th day of the year, 35 days remaining in this year, and we will look forward to our discussion of some of that, what's going to happen in some of those remaining 33 days near the end of our second hour this morning on Morning Cannolis. Once again, thank you for joining me. Thank you for being a part of our discussion this morning as we talk once again, as we have in the past, about significant things going on in law, justice, and the rule of law in America as well. This was a momentous week for a number of cases pending in the state and federal courts, specifically for a former president named Donald Trump. Lots and lots of litigation either coming to an end or moving forward when it comes to the disposition of cases, of claims pending in our state and our federal courts around the country. So much of this this morning, not all of it, but much of it focuses upon Donald Trump's faring in the various courts, principally federal courts, but also state courts in New York and other places. The developments, especially on Tuesday of this past week, sort of marked the first time a lot of the legal jeopardy that surrounded the former president has fully come into focus since he declared his third bid for the Republican presidential nomination the week before, of all this happening shortly after his announcing his presidency, his presidential candidacy, that is. And sort of the first test of whether all of the courtroom events that we're going to chat about this morning place him in line to become a viable candidate, or whether these things do have an impact upon voters who may consider some alternative candidate as that presidential election and the campaign goes forward. Several developments this past week, including in the documents case and the reality that the Trump tax returns, both of which we're going to chat about right now, will make it way into the American psyche in the days and weeks ahead, and bring together in many ways two very important legal strategies that the Trump team, the former president, has been advancing, both directly and indirectly, implicitly and explicitly in many, many of these cases. The first of those is this contention, and it has its articulation, it has its lifeblood in some of the specific theories, some of the legal things that the president and his team has been articulating in court, that as an ex-president, he has certain different treatment entitlements, if you will, under the law that other citizens do not. And many judges, including some this past week, have said, nope, that's not true. Everyone is subject to the same laws. No one is above the law. But nonetheless, there has been this contention, specifically in the documents case, Mar-a-Lago, that case, and others, that the president, because of his status as a former president, has this special different treatment entitlement when it comes to the adjudication of claims that he is bringing, and that others are bringing in the courts of our nation. The second major theory is that the delays, the approach in pursuing litigation in the courts, certainly out of the courts as well, but it also may be reaching the limits of its utility here in America. We're going to hear this morning about some of the judges who have begun to put an end to the endless delays. The president, of course, has long managed to keep many of these events, many of these cases, many of his claims up and running, and those might not be available to others in the American jurisprudential system, much consistent with this first concept I just described. But again, this past week, some indication that theory, that approach to delay and postponing the exposition and the ultimate resolution of cases and claims, that may be coming to an end, as many judges now are beginning to say, and likely will say in the remaining 35 days or so of this year, that enough is enough and we're going to get these cases resolved. All of that, of course, as I indicated, in the wake of the former president's announcement of the previous week that he is a candidate for the presidency in 2024, coming up in less than 2 years from now. And so all of this happening while he is a candidate for the presidency, nothing about that prevents the prosecution and going forward of these civil and criminal cases. And we're going to talk about all of those right after the break here on Morning Cannolis. Continue to stay with me and Kelvin as we take your phone calls and engage in this discussion about the law and government and justice in America.
Douglas LaFollette, welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
Good to be here, Mike. Across the country, in most every state, the Secretary of State is the person who is in charge of the elections. And we've seen lots of hanky-panky in Florida back during the Al Gore elections, in Ohio and Georgia and Arizona and Michigan.
We appreciate you coming around, sir.
Check out the entire podcast library at darnwi.com.
So all you folks out there, if you haven't registered to vote, register to vote. Get ready to vote. There are so many things on the ballot this November, at our freedom, our liberty, and our way of life. But we'll get to all of that this evening.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m. on the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM.
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
I'm really trying hard not to go insane from the mind screw that is this situation. Yes. With I was going to say the GAB, but now it's the WEC, which right. Was audited by the LAB, and then it's now screwed up by the GOP, and we're all SOL. Good for us. Congratulations.
Look at all those acronyms. Yeah.
Oh. We're the winners.
Tune in for Dueling Tangents every weekday at 2.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Mainly sunny skies this afternoon with daytime highs approaching 55. Winds out of the southwest 10 to 15 miles an hour. Slight chance for scattered rain showers tonight. Lows dip down to about 36. Cloudy skies expected. Scattered rain showers likely tomorrow. High temperatures reach up to 41. Overcast skies. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 43 degrees.
A progressive voice from Beaver Dam to Kenosha. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
And we are back here on Morning Cannolis. Thank you once again for joining me and Calvin, my producer, here in the studios of Civic Media, the Shaw in downtown Waukesha. A beautiful and bright fall day at 540 AM, 101 FM. Also taking your phone calls this hour and also next hour at 844-967-2789. I announced in our first segment this morning that we're going to be doing a whirlwind tour through a survey of many cases that had significant events happen in them this past week, including the United States Supreme Court, a certain Court of Appeals in the South, three altogether, state courts in New York, and then also a federal district court in the District of Columbia. Six altogether. Let's jump right into that. Let's talk about what's going on in the courts of our land. We know well that since the time of Richard Nixon's presidency, it has been tradition for candidates and also incumbents of the presidency to release to the government but more generally to the public their tax returns. Already the tax returns, of course, are filed with the IRS and to the government. But candidates for the presidency have always announced that they will, during the course of the campaigns, and they do release their tax returns as a way of ensuring some transparency so that the voting public can determine things about their financial status, their transactions in the world, otherwise make determinations about whether they are qualified to and should become a president of the United States of America. That norm was broken. That norm was broken in 2016. When the presidential campaign of Donald Trump was one of the first in history, in recent history in any event, to announce that the president would not be releasing his tax returns at the time. And to this day, to some extent, he has continued to maintain that he is under audit by the IRS and for that reason is obliged not to turn those over. That is not an accurate statement of the law. You can always turn your own tax returns over. But the IRS keeps those, obviously, the tax returns of all of us under wrap and key. And for that reason, during the presidency of Donald Trump, there was a request made by the House Ways and Means Committee under a specific federal statute that empowered the House Ways and Means Committee to obtain the tax returns, the official returns maintained by the IRS, to get those tax returns from a sitting president, in this case, Donald Trump. There were requests made to the Department of the Treasury, which is the department of the cabinet that oversees and has inside it the Internal Revenue Service. And at the time, the Secretary of the Treasury determined that the request of the House Ways and Means Committee, even though there was statutory authority for this, that the House Ways and Means Committee did not have a basis on which to make that request and to receive those tax returns. And so that began a series of back and forth arguments about the entitlement of the committee maintaining through its committee chair, Richard Neal, that there are two reasons to get those tax returns. One, the congressional oversight capacity and the things that Congress generally does to oversee government. And second, to determine whether or not there are any legislative initiatives that need to be begun as a result of things identified in those tax returns, kind of the traditional congressional initiatives in these areas. And as a result of that, the Democratic leadership of the committee went into court and said, we've got a right to get these tax returns, came up through the lower district courts, the lower appellate courts, and specifically during the course of that litigation, the House committee maintaining that the possibility of some hidden conflicts of interest or obligations owed by the president or missed or underpayments on returns could be problematic, again, as a part of the congressional oversight responsibility in setting tax policy, which is what the House Ways and Means Committee basically does. A lower court had previously found the committee did have this legitimate legislative purpose for seeing the return. And indeed, an appellate court also made the same finding. Needless to say, this has been going up and down in and out of the courts again, quite literally since 2016 during the course of the first campaign of Donald Trump for the presidency. And this past week, a major event happening coming out of the United States Supreme Court, when this past week, the United States Supreme Court denied former President Trump's final request to block the House Ways and Means Committee from getting access to those records, those tax returns. It is not the case that the former president himself now has to turn them over. The IRS has them. So this is a matter of producing from the Department of the Treasury through the IRS these returns and sending them off to the House Ways and Means Committee. Probably that's going to happen this coming week, bringing to an end again years and years of litigation. The decision by the United States Supreme Court was unanimous. A two-sentence order deciding that indeed the House committee does have this capacity and identifying no basis upon which the president's claims for restricting those, not having those turned over, could succeed. So that happening just this past week. Interesting to ask about what will happen in the future. Representative Lloyd Doggett, who's a Texas Democrat sitting on the committee, has said that there are certain privacy protections, and he's right about that. But he also said that the panel did have the option of releasing those documents publicly, and that, of course, he describes this time pressure that creates an additional reason for perhaps making some disclosures. Interesting to see what will happen here, since the 117th Congress is just about to expire, and a new Congress and a new House Ways and Means Committee will presumably be taking its place on the Capitol Hill come January. The chair, as I said, of that committee, Richard Neal, Massachusetts Democrat, said that the Supreme Court this past week had restored this vital norm. He said, since the Magna Carta, the principle of oversight has been upheld, today is no different. He said, this rises above politics. The committee, and again, he's referring to the House Ways and Means Committee, will now conduct the oversight that we've sought for at least 3.5 years. That is the time period of all of this federal legislation. The president said, former president, that is, said, that, of course, that he was not only disappointed, But he went on to say on his own media platform, Truth Social, he said, why would anybody be surprised? The Supreme Court has ruled against me. They always do. And so that happening just this past week coming out of the United States Supreme Court. Let's talk about more cases coming out of our federal and state courts right after the break here at the Civic Media Studios of WAUK.
WAUK 540 AM. New Berlin's choice for News Talk Radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
My husband said to give our house more curb appeal, so I started painting. Then I went on Google and looked up the meaning of curb appeal. It said to make it more nicer. So I called Replacement Window Center, and they put in new replacement windows.
Get free installation and 0% financing for 18 months. Free installation and 0% financing. Hurry, call now.
Replacement Window Center. Our name says it all.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
Self-monitor your blood pressure in 4 easy-to-remember steps. Self-monitoring is power. Visit managerbp.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council, the American Heart Association, and the American Medical Association, in partnership with the Office of Minority Health and Health Resources and Services Administration.
AP News, I'm Ben Thomas. Cities across Ukraine have been hit by Russian missile attacks in recent days, knocking out power and water. But the retaken city of Kherson in the south has been taking particularly heavy punishment. Karen Shamas has the story.
The sound of shelling thunders across the Kherson skyline. Ukrainian troops on the front line launch reconnaissance drones to determine the enemy's positions before firing. Kurt, a commander for a military unit, told the AP that Russian soldiers had taken up positions on the left bank of the Dnipro River. While the goal for Ukraine is to push the Russians further back, crossing the Dnipro River has become tricky as both sides have destroyed surrounding bridges. A day earlier, at least 5 people died in the city from Russian shelling. Nevertheless, the mood in Kherson remains defiant and resolute, as Kherson resident Valentina Pedina tells the AP. Putin wanted to take Kherson. Never. We will die here, but we will not give it to him. I'm Karen Chamas.
Investigators say the gunman who killed 6 people at a Walmart in Chesapeake, Virginia Tuesday night bought the gun just hours before opening fire on co-workers. He also left a note listing grievances. Meanwhile, the mass shooting at a popular gay club last weekend has Colorado Springs looking inward.
I think a lot of people, including myself, might have ascribed to the notion that we were going to age out of hate.
State Representative Leslie Harrod is the first openly LGBTQ and black person elected to Colorado's General Assembly.
It's not going to just go away. In fact, it's being bred in our communities, and it's been lifted up. So we have to actively change that.
European Union data shows Twitter took longer to review hateful content and removed less of it in 2022 than last year. Meantime, Elon Musk says Twitter will try to relaunch its premium service next week. The last attempt was flooded with imposter accounts. This is AP News.
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
I'm really trying hard not to go insane from the mind screw that is this situation. Yes. With I was going to say the GAB, but now it's the WEC, which right. Was audited by the LAB, and then it's now screwed up by the GOP, and we're all SOL. Good for us. Congratulations.
Look at all those acronyms. Yeah.
Oh. We're the winners.
Tune in for Dueling Tangents every weekday at 2.
Finish your high school diploma for you and your family. Visit finishyourdiploma.org to find free adult education centers near you. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
What is dadication?
People ask how your children learn how to ride a bike and you didn't. I just created an environment where they taught themselves and all I had to do was be there.
That's dadication. Visit fatherhood.gov to hear more.
Our weekend review, our analysis, our discussion of law and government and justice in America. We're chatting about some major cases just this past week. Many of them, not all of them, but many of them affecting the future and the livelihood, if you will, of the former President Donald Trump. We're also taking your phone calls all this morning, this hour and next at 844-967-2789. From those of you who have observations, comments, questions about any of these matters pending in our federal and our state courts. Mark, you're on the line this morning. Thanks for calling in with your thought or your comment.
Yeah, it's incredible to me that, well, one of the things I saw this morning is that Kevin McCarthy was saying, well, they're going to read the Constitution, you know, that in its entirety. It's never been done before. Well, I think it has been done before, and it's going to be interesting to see how they will actually handle some of the language in the Constitution. The article I read actually talked about, well, how they're going to go, you know, read about the three-fifths clause in the Constitution, which, of course, we have now rejected that. And that I'm no constitutional scholar, and I'm just a provincial boy from far northern Wisconsin originally, and that we see now in the former president a direct example of, as I said before, Hamilton's warning in Federalist 75 about an avaricious man, you know, looking to enrich himself, you know, after he leaves office, which Donald Trump has enriched himself while he was in office. I mean, that the rejection of the Constitution by so many of those on the right that, you know, have now won office, I mean, insurrectionists that have now been elected and reelected to Congress, is kind of mind-numbing to me. That my read of the 14th Amendment is there's no conviction is required. It is just, you know, their mere participation in the insurrection or giving aid and comfort to the insurrectionists is a disqualification for being in public office. And I think the sooner that our prosecutors, our attorneys general in those various states go in after and actually indict the people that, you know, that are, have, you know, there's evidence out there that they, you know, participated in the insurrection via the fake electors as well. I mean, that we have the congressman from, I think, the first Fitzgerald, he arranged the room for the fake electors. I mean, all the fake electors, including one who was actually on our elections board. I don't understand the delay. I mean, Republicans would show no hesitation at all to go after people, and including they've talked about who they're going to go after. You know, when the new Congress comes up, they're going to have nothing but hearings for some things that I don't even think are illegal behavior. I mean, there may be missteps in policy, but right. and there's Mark, clearly no constitutional violation.
Right. And Mark, you know, you raise an awful lot of good questions and points there, all ultimately deriving from the Constitution. Take a couple of them. Obviously, the Kevin McCarthy, who has been the minority leader for these past several years, likely to become the Speaker of the House of Representatives with a razor-thin majority of Republicans in the House of Representatives, talking about reading the Constitution, and it will be interesting. It is not the first time that has been done. Certainly, there have been others in many other settings, including on Capitol Hill, in which articles of the Constitution, amendments to it, have been read out loud. You identified one of them having to do, of course, with the codification in our founding document of slavery. The three-fifths language in the Constitution, which, of course, overcome by the post-Civil War amendments and also the Emancipation Proclamation as well, but also the 14th Amendment that, on its face, prohibits the holding of public office by someone who is engaged in an insurrectionist kind of activity, not very often invoked. It was invoked, as we have spoken on this very broadcast, by a state court judge in Montana to keep a state official off the ballot, from taking office, from his position there in Montana. And so there is some precedent. It's been invoked in a couple of other cases as well, unsuccessfully, to keep various folks from taking their seats in the United States Congress. But interesting to see how that is going to play out. Interesting to see how the Constitution in general and the amendments to it, but also the fundamental articles of the Constitution that were authored again by James Madison, George Mason, other people, founding fathers, are animating the next couple of years and playing the next decades and hopefully long beyond that for the United States of America. So, Mark, we appreciate your comments, your thoughts about what we can expect as the 117th Congress comes to an end at the end of this calendar year, and then the 118th Congress is sworn in. You have to have a Speaker of the House when that is done, but early January, in just a little over a month from now, new members and continuing members of the Congress are sworn into their positions, and we'll look forward to seeing what this modest change in authority, perhaps not so modest in the House of Representatives, how that impacts not only investigations, Mark, as you've indicated, but also legislation. The House Ways and Means Committee that we talked about right before the break is responsible for initiating budget-related legislation and putting in place and putting in motion the establishment of a budget. Obviously, needs to be approved by the United States Senate, signed off on by a president, an awful lot of economic power in the House of Representatives, and also, of course, in the White House and the Senate as well. Lots of things to look forward. Mark, we appreciate your comments and your observations about our immediate future here in the United States of America. Let's talk about what else is coming up here and what else happened just this past week in another major court, a federal court in the United States of America. We're going to go from the Capitol Hill, where the United States Supreme Court is venued, down to Atlanta, where the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals heard oral argument this past week in the Mar-a-Lago case. The Mar-a-Lago case, you recall well that in the wake of the execution of a judicially authorized search warrant in early August of this past summer, the former president went into federal court in Atlanta and asked in a civil proceeding for the judge, her name is Eileen Cannon, basically to stop the further investigation, the review of all these documents. And Eileen Cannon basically did that. She entered an order that with respect to about 11,000 documents, 100 or so of which are classified, she found that the government should, in fact, stop that investigation while a review of all of them is undertaken. Judge Raymond Deary, she appointed him to serve as a special master looking through all these documents to determine whether that there were not there were privileges in them. Again, an unprecedented kind of response to a situation where, again, no one has been charged yet in the federal system. No one has been brought in before the halls of justice to answer for specific crimes. That may happen down the road. But an unprecedented civil response by the federal court down there, Judge Eileen Cannon, Raymond Deary, brought in as a retired federal judge in Brooklyn to do this yeoman's work at the direction of Eileen Cannon. We know from past history here in the 11th Circuit, not too long ago found that at least with respect to those 100 classified documents or so, that the government would in fact be able to get access to them, to review them, to determine not only what is the criminal nature of them, their acquisition, perhaps their use, but also to ensure that we're safe and secure. Many of those classified documents related to national security secrets, presumably, that might jeopardize in some ways our operations overseas and our safety and security right here at home. And so she basically initially prohibited all that. The Court of Appeals came in and said, no, you've got to at least let the government go ahead with respect to those 100 documents. And in the wake of that, that process has gone forward. Judge Deary conducting a number of hearings, being very doubtful of many of the positions taken by the former president's counsel in connection with his review of these documents. And this past week, in connection with a renewed petition, basically the same case, but renewed and brought forth in all of its aspects this past week, the United States Department of Justice asking the 11th Circuit, which oversees the federal district court, including that of Eileen Cannon, to stop all of this civil intervention in this criminal investigation of the Mar-a-Lago case. And what do we know? What came out of that oral argument this past week? We know that the three-judge panel, including two judges appointed by the former president, Donald Trump, were not only skeptical, but very, very doubtful, very, very doubtful that there is any basis at all upon which the president could stop this investigation, could suspend the review of the documents by the Department of Justice as it determines whether there were violations, for example, of the Espionage Act, of the Presidential Records Act, all those things set forth in the original affidavit to support the search warrant way back in August. The Court of Appeals looking at all of the attorneys in this case and finding very little upon which to hang its hat, if you will, in finding not in favor of the former president, but almost certainly finding in favor of the Department of Justice. The request from the Attorney General, the request from the Department of Justice is to shut all this civil review down. And highly likely that the Court of Appeals, based upon the oral argument this past week, is going to do just that, bringing to a close about 5 months of all this activity in the civil court, again, being initiated by the former president to delay, to stop the regular course of investigation going forward. Along the way, the chief of the appellate court, this is the 11th Circuit again, sitting in Atlanta, his name is Judge William Pryor, not only cast doubt on the arguments made by the former president, but also said that he was scratching his head about all of this. He said, we've got to be concerned about the precedent that we would create that would allow any target of offense of a criminal investigation to go into district court and to have a district court entertain this kind of petition, exercise equitable jurisdiction, that's the kind of thing that allows a court to intervene, and to interfere with the executive branch's ongoing investigation. That's just about as clear as you can be when it comes to an appellate court saying, there's no there, there's nothing here, there's no basis for this, there's no precedent for that, and that again coming from the chief judge of the court sitting on this panel entertaining these oral arguments. Judge Pryor went on to say, other than the fact that this involves a former president, everything else about this is indistinguishable, he said. Again, at the start of our program this morning, our broadcast today, talked about this notion that no one is above the law. That's what Judge Pryor was saying this past week in response to Donald Trump's attorney's petitions to that court. Along the way as well, one of the judges did ask one of the attorneys who's representing the president in this matter. He said, you know, what are we doing here? What is the point of all of this? Again, very strongly indicating that the 11th Circuit is going to put an end to all of this. Along the way, another interesting thing that we've talked about, some civics here this morning on Morning Cannolis as well. I have always bristled, I think most people who know how these things work, not just prosecutors, but anyone who's involved in the judicial system, defense attorneys, courts, judges, court staff, witnesses, even victims, references to this execution of a search warrant in August being a raid, R-A-I-D. And at least a couple of occasions during the course of this oral argument this past week, the judges of the 11th Circuit looked at counsel for the former president and said, you know what, let's not talk about this as a raid, as if there was somebody kicking something down without judicial process. This was, one of the judges said, his name was Britt Grant, rebuking the Trump attorneys, saying, no, this was a properly entered, a properly executed search warrant. Let's not use that loaded term raid. Let's instead call it what it is, which is a judge finding probable cause that there was, in fact, a basis to go in and to search and to seize those 11,000 documents, including 100 of those that are classified, a basis for doing that. Let's not call it a raid anymore. Let's call it a judicially authorized search warrant. It's not nearly as simple as calling it a raid, but the judge, again, admonishing counsel for the manner in which they speak about this language, also used, of course, by the former president to explain to the world how unfairly he has been treated. Again, the 11th Circuit almost certainly going to very soon, I suspect, probably in the month of December, issue an order bringing to an end this 5 months of review by the district court, including Judge Deary's review, bringing to an end all of that coming out of the 11th Circuit. It is always, we always hasten to add, it's always impossible to predict exactly what a court will do. Sometimes you cannot read the tea leaves based simply upon oral arguments, whether it's for the Supreme Court, whether it's before an appellate court, like the 11th Circuit, like the 7th Circuit, where we are, like a federal district court, by a state court judge, a state appellate court. But this week, we've got a pretty good sense that the Mar-a-Lago civil case is going to be brought to a close very soon, likely talking about that in future broadcasts. Come back and join us for more discussion of yet more cases in the state and federal courts pending here in our nation.
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
I'm really trying hard not to go insane from the mind screw that is this situation. Yes. With I was going to say the GAB, but now it's the WEC, which is audited by the LAB, and then it's now screwed up by the GOP. We're all SOL. Good for us. Congratulations.
Look at all those acronyms. Yeah.
We're the winners.
Tune in for Dueling Tangents every weekday at 2.
We are joined by the 57th Assembly District Representative, Lee Snodgrass. Thanks for being here.
Listen Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
How do I need to adapt this based on what has changed since I first introduced it? Government does not move fast. I'm sure that's a shocker to all of you guys. Public policy doesn't change until public opinion changes.
Listen to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry right here on the Shaw 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM.
We have to really understand how critically important a time this is. Time for talk is over. The time for action is now. Because my voice has always been and will continue to be for people who don't have a voice.
Tune in to the Earl Ingram Show every Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Only on WAUK 540 AM, 101.1 FM, The Shaw.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Mainly clear skies this afternoon with daytime highs approaching 55. Winds out of the southwest 10 to 15 miles an hour. Cloudy skies expected tonight. Slight chance for scattered rain showers. Lows dip down to about 36. Scattered rain showers again tomorrow. High temperatures reach up to 41. Cloudy skies. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 43 degrees.
WAUK 540 AM, Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at WAUKradio.com.
And we are rounding out our first hour here on Morning Cannolis, talking about law and justice and the courts in America. We've spoken already about this major Supreme Court decision this past week, finding that indeed the House Ways and Means Committee is entitled to receive from the IRS the back taxes of the former president. Also, a strong indication from the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals, also a federal court, this one in Georgia, almost certainly going to be putting an end to the longstanding five-month attack by the former president on a legitimate investigation being conducted by the Department of Justice. We'll look forward to further actions in both of those venues. Let's go to another venue, this time back in New York. We'll go a little bit north now into New York, where we've got a couple of lawsuits pending as of this past week. And both of them, including a newly initiated lawsuit, just a couple of days ago, by a woman named E. Jean Carroll. We have spoken about her before on this broadcast and others of Civic Media. And once again, this past week, some major development in connection with E. Jean Carroll's fight, her legal dispute with the former president. You may recall that E. Jean Carroll maintained in some articles, some public writings that she published, that way back in the 1990s, about 27 years or so ago, at that time, not a president, but Donald Trump in New York City had assaulted her, had physically, sexually assaulted her in a store in Manhattan, the Bergdorf Goodman store. And of course, the statute of limitations for that criminal action have run, but put an asterisk next to that because we'll get back to that in just a moment or so. She had written then these articles during the course of Donald Trump's presidency in which she described this event and having been the victim of his sexual assault way back in the 1990s. While the president was president, he said from the Oval Office that she is lying about that, this never happened, made some other frankly fairly scurrilous comments about her physical appearance. And based upon that, E. Jean Carroll initiated in New York State Court a defamation action against him, saying that his saying that she had lied about this event defamed her, impugned her reputation, and compromised her position in not only the commercial world, but as a human being generally. So that lawsuit proceeding along the way during the course of the Trump administration, for a variety of reasons, brought into federal court on the basis that the president's comments were made in the course of his duties and responsibilities as the president, a position taken by the Department of Justice, I think an awful lot of us are not only skeptical of, but downright rejecting of, but nonetheless comes into federal court on whether or not, in fact, the United States of America should be substituted for Donald Trump. The reason why that's significant in this federal case is that if the United States is substituted substituted for the president in this defamation case, now pending in federal court. It almost certainly will be dismissed because defamation is not a cause of action against a government authority. That issue, all of that is pending before the Second Circuit Court of Appeals. Meanwhile, the trial judge in the underlying case has directed that we're going to go ahead with this litigation. We're not going to be delaying this further. And he did, in fact, order the deposition of the former president, which happened fairly recently. We don't know the results of that, but may at some point down the road. What happened this past week, to give another gloss, another important footnote on this pending litigation? Well, a number of years ago, the New York legislature passed something called the Adult Survivors Act. And basically it opened a one-year window for survivors of sexual assault to sue their alleged abusers no matter how long ago the particular attack, the offense conduct took place. Once again, opening basically a one-year window. That window opened just a day or so ago, 2 days or so ago, and in the midst of that, E. Jean Carroll has now filed another lawsuit alleging battery and also defamation by the former president, another lawsuit that is much related to her first lawsuit, but again, giving her this window to charge battery in a way that she could not previously do through the government and through the state of New York. Significantly, that lawsuit also prompted by the former president's more recent statements in his own social media platform, this Truth Social platform, once again denying this event way back in the 1990s, thus the defamation claim in this new lawsuit, and also again charging him with battery under the Adult Survivors Act. That lawsuit just now brought this past week. It is parallel to and joins plainly the other lawsuit that is pending still in federal court, going ahead toward some ultimate resolution. This, a new lawsuit, but predicated upon the same factual situation, a different cause of action, including not just defamation, recent and past, but also battery. That by E. Jean Carroll just this past week in New York, a significant piece of legislation. The lawyer for Donald Trump said that this case is nothing more than a political ploy like many others. The attorney for E. Jean Carroll, of course, said just the opposite, that this is an attempt to try to achieve justice after many, many years of injustice and waiting for some appropriate forum to get that justice in the courts of America. So once again, a major new lawsuit just initiated again in New York by E. Jean Carroll, adding to the former president's other legal woes and legal challenges of these days. Let's stay in New York for just a moment or so. Let's talk about other cases pending there as well. We know that in the course of the tax fraud litigation, the prosecution by the Manhattan District Attorney, that in recent weeks, this fellow named Alan Weisselberg has testified. Alan Weisselberg, again, this criminal trial, formally pled guilty to about $1.7 million in fraud. Basically, this is an allegation of an off-the-books compensation pursuit by two of the Trump companies. The tax fraud trial, including Alan Weisselberg's testimony, has now concluded, and the matter, of course, then ultimately going to be resolved sometime fairly soon. Weisselberg testified along the way that his annual pay was increased to $1.14 million, some extra cash in his pay they used to pay for things like a Manhattan apartment, a Mercedes-Benz car, and some tuition for his grandchildren. We know that Donald Trump himself has not been charged in that case. And Alan Weisselberg has tried very hard to sort of be right down the middle, both in implicating the companies in which he is for which he is still employed, but also not directly implicating the Trump organization, the Trump family, including Donald Trump and his children. The company those two could be fined as much as $1 million or more. They could also be stopped. They could be enjoined from engaging in certain commercial transactions depending upon the results of that trial. So again, that tax fraud trial involving Alan Weisselberg now coming to an end right in New York City in the Manhattan DA's office. Some indication as well that the Manhattan DA may not be finished with that overall investigation. Perhaps in the wake of this, we'll hear even more about that particular case. Again, a criminal case pending in New York State Court. We're going to chat about another case also pending in New York City and the state of New York when we come back for our second hour of Morning Cannolis. Stay with me. Stay with me and my producer, Calvin, as we take your calls and questions right here talking about courts in America 2022.
I'm looking at the phone lines. I'm seeing some familiar faces. Wants to remind a Gene of Eau Claire.
Well, welcome back, Matt. I really miss you. We've been missing getting woke every morning, but now we'll get woke in the afternoon.
Wants to remind a Andrew of Detroit.
Professor, it's so nice you're back. We missed you during your vacation, and I'm very happy to be in your class for the semester.
Thanks a lot for calling in. I appreciate all my callers.
Tune in to Matt Flynn Direct, Monday through Friday, 3 to 4 p.m.
We are the boy band.
Your tween made you see.
We are the boy.
It's painful concert number 3.
We are the boy band. We're 5 and 19.
We are the boy band.
Always singing on key.
You love your kids enough to take them to see their favorite band. Love them enough to make sure they're buckled up in the back seat. Show them you love them. Keep them safe. Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.